We were deplatformed from Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter within hours.
To all Americans, we say, we will be fooled no longer. The tiny emperor has no clothes.
1 year ago, they tried to censor the truth.
Good afternoon, I'm Jim Bopp. I'm the director of litigation for the America's Frontline Doctors. And my job is to tell you the legal remedy to the problem that Dr. Gold just so thoroughly explained. Now, for 45 years, I've been involved in constitutional litigation since I had started representing my first national client in 1978 as general counsel for the National Right to Life Committee in Washington. Since then, I brought constitutional cases in 45 states. I have sued the Federal Election Commission, the IRS, and fought the Federal Trade Commission in dozens of lawsuits. And, of course, that's when legal rights are violated. And we have very fundamental constitutional rights that are involved in the current controversy. Now, over the last 18 months, in my office in Terre Haute, I've been contacted because of my litigation by numerous people who have wanted to bring lawsuits against mask mandates or business shutdowns or gatherings that had been restricted. And of course, as we reflect back on the last 18 months, if you look back at that beginning of that time, of course, we were all told that if we don't take severe measures to at least flatten the curve, that there was likely to be 2.2 million deaths in the United States in the first year as a result of the COVID pandemic. And then we saw the cases rise and the death tolls rise up until we reached a rather large number in the United States. And of course, during that time, many people would say, and I think there's a good justification for this, that at that time, based on what we knew then, that there was a compelling governmental justification for a number of restrictive measures. And some of those measures certainly did violate people's constitutional rights. But where are we now? Well, we went to the top of that bell curve and came down until a few months ago we reached basically the bottom, where the number of cases and the death toll evened out and is now at the level of seasonal flu. So the pandemic, according to the guidelines of the CDC, is in what they call the transition phase. That is, when restrictions should be lifted that have been imposed because of the pandemic's progress over the last year and a half. And of course, we saw that a few months ago when it looked like the major crisis was over, that the number of cases had fallen 95% from the peak, and states and local governments all over the United States were lifting or even eliminating the restrictions that they had imposed at the height of the pandemic. And then there was a vaccine mandate. The vaccine mandate no government in the United States has imposed, except for certain public universities have imposed, and some private ones as well. These vaccine mandates were targeting college-age students and requiring them to be vaccinated or be virtually expelled from their university. Now, of course, this is the government acting and now committing really the most serious violation of constitutional rights, which is the right of bodily integrity and autonomy and the right to choose medical treatment. Because based on the, of course, history that Dr. Gold just gave you, modern medical ethics and current FDA regulations requires both informed consent and the choice in consultation with your physician on whether or not to accept or refuse medical treatment. And this is for an individual choice. And critically, in consultation with your physician. Now, there are certainly people, including plaintiffs that I represent, that have been told by their physician that because of their underlying medical conditions, that they are not to take the COVID vaccine. But I know of no university that would give an exception to that person. So this is the most serious invasion of our individual rights that actually the government could institute in the context of a pandemic, or even when the pandemic is waning. Well, of course, I was contacted about these mandates, and I decided that the situation had arisen such that legal action needed to be taken. And so I began to represent students at Indiana University, and I will tell you about that case shortly. But the first thing you have to do is you have to figure out what is the strategic obstacle to your goal? What is it? What is it that stands in the way between the constitutional rights that these adult students at Indiana University have to the accomplishment of their goal, which is to restore the choice of vaccination or no vaccination to them as adults under the Constitution? Well, there is a strategic obstacle. It's called Jacobson versus Massachusetts. This is a case decided in 1905 at the height of the Progressive Era. And it incorporates in its central holding the key elements of the Progressive Era. And the people who call themselves progressives today also have these three key elements. Number one, they denigrate individual rights versus the needs of the collective. Second, they outsource decisions about public policy to experts and who we are to slavishly follow each of their recommendations, whether they ultimately conflict with each other or not. And then, and of course, we've seen that recently, and we see that in the Jacobson decision. And then finally, they denigrate democracy itself because they don't trust even public officials to make these decisions, because they know public officials would weigh first the risk and benefits and problem health and safety problems associated with the pandemic with, of course, the consequences of taking certain actions to the economy, to the mental health of people, to suicide, to family breakup, to economic devastation. And they would balance all these together to determine whether or not a particular action should be taken. And in the minds of the progressives, these public officials are what? Influenced by the people. We need experts in a hermetically sealed room to make these decisions and not have these people in the democracy influencing the results. And many people have interpreted this Jacobson decision as giving plenary authority to the government to require, as was the question before it, a vaccination mandate that was issued by the city of Boston in the midst of the smallpox pandemic that has killed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of people in the some thousand years or so that it has ravaged the world until it was eliminated, we think, in 1976. Well, that decision led to one of the most notorious decisions in the history of the Supreme Court, and it's a hideous one. And that is the 1927 decision of Buck v. Bell. And in Buck v. Bell, again, also at the height of the progressive era, the court said first, in two sentences, the first sentence, they cited Jacobson explicitly and said the ability of the government to require forced vaccinations is broad enough to encompass the ability of the government to require forced sterilization of mentally retarded people. And then, after citing Jacobson, said, quote, three generations of imbeciles is enough, end of quote. Well, that decision certainly has been repudiated and discredited, as horrifying as it is. And, of course, Jacobson has been undermined by its own progeny. Well, there's another big change, because in 1905, the current modern constitutional jurisprudence had not arisen. In fact, at that time, the Bill of Rights had not even been incorporated against the states or the city of Boston. So the whole Bill of Rights was off the table as far as protecting citizens at that time. But of course, that has occurred. The Bill of Rights applies to the cities and states now, and and in that context, substantive due process has been recognized, and the right to bodily integrity and autonomy, and the right to choose medical treatment has been recognized as a very important constitutionally protected right that requires substantial governmental justification proven by the government in order to infringe upon those rights. Now, so what do we do here, okay, in designing a litigation strategy to remove the strategic obstacle of the Jacobson decision? Well, that's what's called test case litigation. And I've been involved in test case litigations since 1978, when, as General Counsel for National Right to Life, my first task was, how are we going to overturn Roe v. Wade? And I look back at the most successful, and importantly successful, historical example of test case litigation, and that is the NAACP's several decade-long effort to overturn Plessy versus Ferguson, which ultimately occurred in 1954 in the Brown versus Board of Education decision. And we look back on that and we would say, oh man, well, I mean, this should be a piece of cake, right? I mean, Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal, is obviously in conflict with equal protection of the laws and, you know, in the 14th Amendment. And we fought that terrible civil war to provide that protection for black people and everyone. And so we would look back at that and say, well, you know, whatever, this should have happened right away, right? No, it didn't happen right away. It took decades. And it took numerous cases until ultimately in 1954, the justices on the court were able to marshal a unanimous court to overturn Plessy versus Ferguson. This can be difficult, and you have to know how to do it. Well, you got to start with an understanding that the best kind of case to bring, because this is the reality. It often takes multiple cases to accomplish this. Very rarely it doesn't. But in the some 250 cases where Supreme Court precedent had been explicitly overruled, in almost every single case, there was a series of cases that were brought that culminated in the eventual overrule, just like what happened with respect to Brown versus Board of Education. And so you have to plan for that. Now, secondly, you have to have cases. The best cases are the ones that have these two features. first, that you could argue that under this precedent, maybe with a few adjustments, this challenge can be upheld. Understanding that the other feature is always present, and that feature is when the Supreme Court is asked to apply a precedent, the validity of that precedent is legitimately before the court, and if they are willing, they can overturn it. So you want to have a case that you can argue with a few adjustments, our challenge can be upheld. And understanding that the court can step out and solve the ultimate problem for you if they are willing to do that. Now, with Jacobson, people have, and courts have interpreted it as giving plenary authority to public officials to do whatever in the heck they want that they think is necessary for public health. But if you read it carefully, you also see that Jacobson recognized that if there were constitutional rights violated, which they didn't think so back in those days, because those were off, the modern ones hadn't even been created yet, that if there were constitutional rights violated, then the government would have to show that this restriction is reasonable. So under Jacobson, you can actually argue, as we are arguing, that if you look at that exception, which has never, further been recognized or applied in subsequent cases, that exception where constitutional rights are violated, we can win because the vaccination mandate is unreasonable for college students. Now, there is a way to attack Jacobson. Now, you wonder why I, took up the student vaccination mandate at this time. Well, the answer is twofold. Number one, this is the least vulnerable population to the COVID infection. And as a right has been explained, this is a group that has basically a zero risk of adverse mortality and morbidity as a result of an infection. So they are not the people that need the vaccination. What people that desperately need the vaccination, assuming it works, is people the most vulnerable. And of course, as I've mentioned, it's like 600 times greater risk for those over 70 than it is for college age. And the second is the context. Is we are now not at a sense of urgency that we were before, but we are now at the level of seasonal flu, which we do not, do anything even remotely similar to what has been required previously for the COVID vaccine. And certainly we have never, for the seasonal flu, required vaccination. Now, there are a few vaccinations that are required by the government, and including the state of Indiana. But those are much different than this situation. We're talking about measles and chickenpox and polio. And of course, those instances, there had been long use of the vaccines, and they were proven to be exquisitely safe. And number two is that those diseases particularly were virulent for younger people. And so as a result, having children vaccinated from those had huge benefit because they were the most at risk, while at the same time had zero risk of adverse effects of the vaccine. So the situation here is, of course, way different. Now, we take up which kind of checks the next box. You want to bring a case that presents the most favorable situation to attack the doctrine. Remember, the doctrine is public health officials can require anything to, in their judgment, that will protect public health and safety. And so what we're challenging it for the least vulnerable to the disease and in the context in which the pandemic has waned. Now, that is very much like what the NAACP did. You can remember this separate but equal idea, general doctrine they were attacking. What was the first case they brought? They brought a case against the state of Mississippi because their medical school for blacks was not factually equal to the medical school they provided for whites. Well, you don't have to be, you know, a rocket scientist to know that back in the 1930s, that would certainly be the case, right? Medical schools are extremely expensive, and they would not be duplicating that expense for blacks. And they won that case. And they said that the separate but equal, you know, doctrine can't, you know, was not fulfilled here, so the separate school was illegal. You know, that they had to be admitted to the white school. The blacks had to be admitted to the white school. And then they kind of worked their way down in case after case after case, saying, well, the doctrine just can't be applied here. It's not being fulfilled. In other words, they undermine it, they question it, they cause courts to distinguish it, until finally they attacked elementary schools in Topeka, Kansas, and marshaled a unanimous court to now overturn the doctrine. So the IU case can be viewed that way. I mean, this is the most favorable situation for the affected population for the vaccine mandate in the sense that it's not truly needed. And of course, by the way, their whole, in defending this case, IU did not say it was needed because there were deaths or even adverse effects of the COVID infection. They didn't say that. I mean, the cases with IU is there is maybe one death of among the 90,000 students of Indiana University over the last 18 months. And of course, it's minuscule, the number of deaths in this age group. So they never said it was deaths. They said, no, it is that they could become infected and transmit that infection to other people. And so the problem, in their view, is new cases. You know, that there could be new cases among students, and as a result, others could be infected. And so we have to stop the new cases. In other words, the vaccine prevents someone from being infected. That was their defense. That was 10 days ago. What about today? Today, the president of Indiana University has COVID, despite the fact that she's explained she's been fully vaccinated for months. Now, she's glad, she says in a statement that was issued, I think, on Thursday, she's glad, however, she got the vaccine, because even though the vaccine isn't 100% effective, which is generous, to prevent infection and transmission, which was their justification, but it ameliorates the effect when you get the infection, okay? And which she is hopeful that she'll benefit in that way. Well, students don't need that. Students can get infected and have no adverse effects. In fact, an astronomical number of them, that is the case. All right? So their whole justification, within 10 days of submitting evidence in the trial court, has now completely collapsed. Because as a mainstream reporter asked the FLAC, at the White House spokesman, about Biden's statement, the reason for the vaccination is to prevent new cases and transmission. She explained, no, it's not that at all. It's severe results. So their whole case has now collapsed. Now, what do you do next? You have to understand that there is no silver bullet. One case won't do it, okay? In other words, one lawsuit to attack a doctrine won't do it. That you need to bring multiple cases in various circuits, and you want, of course, to do those in circuits where the any decisions they made are either there aren't any or they're not, or they're favorable to your position, and you want circuits where the general judicial philosophy, they ought to be receptive for this, right? They haven't already drunk the Kool-Aid. So the America's Frontline Doctors, as I've mentioned, is marshaling the legal and financial resources, and we intend to roll out cases and challenge vaccine mandates in at least four other states where these exist, and where the conditions for a favorable outcome also exist. And the final thing about this is case management. You know, the last thing you want is to get entangled in a whole bunch of discovery that takes, you know, a year or two or whatever, and it costs an enormous amount of money. What you want is to bring a PI right away to bring this thing to an expedited decision that can be appealed. If it is not favorable, you then have a motion for injunction pending appeal that actually has the same legal standards as a PI appeal, which we filed on Friday in the IU case. And then be prepared to take it to the United States Supreme Court. Now, I am not saying that this is easy. It is not easy to get an injunction pending appeal from a court of appeals, but I have gotten them in prior cases. It is not easy to get an injunction pending appeal when you've lost in the United States Supreme Court, but I have gotten them. So it's not that this is easy, but this is an expedited way to get the legal issue to the Supreme Court, and the legal issue here is it the general understanding of Jacobson, which is, you know, they can do whatever they want and your only review is rational basis, or is there really constitutionally protected rights that are entitled to heightened scrutiny that the government has to prove their justification? The trial court said it's this. I am appealing saying it is this. And if the Seventh Circuit or the Supreme Court agrees, we will win. Thank you.